Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be spooking today. Yes, and we're going to be going to the state of Arizona. We've got some fun things to share, but I think you're going to find there's a little bit of education that's going to be going along with it. So whether or not you believe in ghosts isn't the issue here. I think what's going to be the issue is chatting with two wonderful people who really have a passion for the unique, the unusual, the paranormal. We're going to be talking with Lily, and Patrick Oldie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you two have developed an interesting partnership. You decided that you were going to put together this book, Scarizona, which is about those special places in the state of Arizona, most of which most people wouldn't even have given a consideration to. So we're going to be educating people on some places they might want to visit to have a rather unique experience. But let's go into your background a little bit, because I think both of you have some interesting things to say. First of all, how did the two of you ever get together on this?
Well, actually, it's kind of funny because I used to work in a video store, and he actually came in as a customer, and we just got to talking one day and found out that we both had a similar interest in the paranormal, and in fact, he was living in a haunted house at the time, so
that was
what started it all, and that was, gosh, that was about 10 years ago.
Now, Katie, you have had an interest in the paranormal from as far back as you can remember. What are some of your earliest experiences that really triggered your curiosity in this venue?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't really know what I would say my earliest experience was. The interest was always there. I mean, it was something that I feel like I was born with. Because I can remember being, you know, whenever they'd have the Halloween specials on about ghosts, I mean, I was drawn to that, like, you know, it was just such a powerful draw. And then as I got older, and I think as I became more open to things, that's when I started to have experiences, like, into my teen years and that sort of thing. So I also lived in a few haunted houses, so I think that had a lot to do with it.
Now, Patrick, here you are at the store visiting with Katie. You're living in a haunted house. You've got a bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Arizona. But they have their own paranormal investigation team at the university. Isn't that a bit unusual? And how did you get involved with that? You've got to tell us something about this haunted house you were in.
Well, actually, the paranormal investigation group I was with was actually with Pima College, which is a community college here in town as well. They have some classes at the U of A about it, but I don't know that if they have an actual group of their own. But I was kind of involved with the group at Pima just simply because they had the parapsychology class and I was interested in it, you know, because I grew up in a haunted house and that sort of thing. I was always interested, so I took that class and started investigating with them after the class was over.
Tell us about the haunted house that you were in at the time you met Katie.
Well, about the time when I lived there when I was about three, and it took a few years before I started seeing anything, but I would stay up late and read in my bedroom, and the way that my bed was situated, I could see out into the hallway, and my parents' bedroom was right across the hall. And as I was, staying up reading, I would see a figure going into my parents' bedroom, like a dark shadow or whatever, like a silhouette of somebody. Just out of the corner of my eye, and the first, you know, probably a dozen times that I saw it, I would get up and run into their bedroom to see who it was, and there would be nobody there, and, you know, I'd go down the hallway and check and see if my parents would be up still watching TV, and so that happened really consistently pretty much all my life, till we moved the bed around and stuff like that, and I would just, see that same figure over and over again, and my parents never told me the house was haunted, so I thought I was, just kind of crazy for a while. I thought, you know, I'm seeing things all the time. But it wasn't until I was in eighth grade that my mom and dad told me that, you know, the house was haunted, and they just didn't want to scare me. And I was like, well, you know, I was kind of scared already because I thought it was nuts. So, you know, I wish I would have known it was haunted.
Oh, wow. Well, now you know you're not nuts.
Right.
And you have another member of your team, McCall.
Yeah, so his name is actually Michael. He just chose to spell it in a totally unpronounceable way.
Well, absolutely. It sounds like Russian. He's got it spelled like one would, you know, it's almost like if you put an I in there, you'd have Mikhail.
Exactly. But he is actually my husband, and he is responsible for all of the photos that have been taken for the book, with the exception of there's a couple that he's actually in, but for the most part, he does all of our tech work, he does all of our photography, he does a lot of our driving and event coordination. He's just sort of our go-to guy for pretty much everything.
And he is a skeptic because he wants proof, but he's had his own experiences, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. In fact, I think it's kind of funny, actually, and I give him a hard time about it because he's one of those people that he looks for the logical explanation in everything. If he sees a ghost photo or something, he's always thinking, oh, that's just dust, or that's somebody's thumbprint on the screen or something. But he actually has when he moved into my house, you know, stuff started happening. So, you know, like poltergeist type activity. And then he reveals to me that he's had something following him around since he was about 19. And I was just like, oh, well, that explains a lot. So, but I think it's because of that, actually, that he's developed a sort of a skeptical attitude because he really, really wants to be convinced.
Well, I think it's good to have a skeptical attitude myself because the mind is so powerful. Sometimes it's very easy for us to fabricate things. Now, let's talk a little bit about what is involved in an investigation. Here you have this team. What does it take for someone to get you guys to come out to the environment? And when you were starting to put this book together, had you already done some investigations, or did you do the investigations as a team after you decided to do the book? Which came first?
Well, we did some investigations through the group at Tama College. We did, I think, over the course of, like, I don't know, 10 years is how long I was involved with them. And it was, like, you know, one investigation a year or whatever. So it wasn't a whole lot of stuff. It was just, you know, a few here and there. And then when we branched out on our own to do our own investigation group, we did a couple on our own first just to kind of get a feel for how we were going to do it. And then when the book came up, you know, when we found the opportunity to do a book or whatever, that's when we kind of really kicked into high gear as far as investigating, because we did like 16 investigations in, I think, 2 months for the book. So, but we did some before the book had started, you know, before we even had a concept of doing a book. So.
All right. So what qualifies you as an investigative team? What is it that if someone contacts you and says, I have this, thus, that, and so in my place, there's a green woman with, you know, purple eyes, it's floating through my living room every night at 8 o'clock. Of course, I'm being a little sassy here. What is it that makes you interested enough to go out? What's required? What kind of tools do you use, and how do you use them?
Well, basically, anyone that's having any kind of a problem they think might be rooted in paranormal, they can contact us through our website. And we'll pretty much take any, you know, we'll go on any investigation, because if it's not a paranormal situation, then at least we can go out and put their mind at ease. And the way that we would do that is we actually, there's a whole host of paranormal shows on the air now, and they go in with, you know, and they lay down lots of cords and they put up lots of computers. Well, we don't do that. We use pretty much just handheld instruments, a digital camera, of course, a digital voice recorder to capture the electronic voice phenomenon, and then also the EMF detector. And those are the three mainstays. We also carry a video camera from time to time, just depending on whether or not we have enough hands to carry it. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes the just the two of us, sometimes the three of us go. But really, you know, we just carry a few things in a bag, and it's very discreet, and we don't really want to make a big production out of it, because we don't want to take a situation and make someone feel more awkward about it by parading in like the, you know, like a Universal Studios tour or something like that. But that's basically the way that we work. And also we do the interviews and we, you know, do sensory replication, which is something that Patrick has a lot more of a broad knowledge about because it's something that he studied as part of his psychology degree. But that it actually sort of taps into the sensitive part, you know, the intuitive part, you know, whatever one might call it. But that's another tool that we use as well.
Now, you mentioned something about electronic voice phenomena. What was the most profound experience that you have had relative to that?
Well, actually, we visited a place in the book called the Nosker Hill in Bed and Breakfast, and that's located in Globe, Arizona. And that was really the first time we caught something on the EVP, as it's called, that was really compelling. And what happened was we set up the voice recorder and we left the room. It used to be a high school, so the rooms are very big and there's a lot of ground to cover. So we went out of outside of our room, closed the door behind us, and we continued to investigate the rest of the building. Now, the floors in this building are very creaky. So you can hear us leaving the room and shutting the door behind us. And a few minutes after we've left, you can quite clearly hear the bathroom door slam shut. And then it sounds like a woman's voice, but she gasps. It's just simply just a gasp into the voice recorder. And that, I think, was the most compelling recording that we've ever gotten. And the reason that the bathroom door is, you know, it's interesting is because there was a very high-powered fan across the room that was actually blowing towards the door, so it would have actually, the force of it would have kept the door open. So against that, it managed to slam shut, and then there was, followed by the gas. So, and of course, there were no footsteps at all, just those two noises. So that was the most interesting one that we've ever gotten.
Yes, I think it was, I think it was Alexander Graham Bell. No, it was Thomas Edison, I believe. Excuse me, I'll correct myself. That was working on a phone at one time to be able to communicate with people on the other side because he believed that there was a very real thing that we could do. But he passed away before he could finish it. Let's talk about the Oliver House. Now, Patrick, you make comments throughout the book. You and Katie both, as something that makes your book very interesting. You talk about these different places, and then you talk about your particular experiences that you had as individuals, which I think is always good because not everybody's going to see or feel or experience the same thing. Tell us about the Oliver House. How did you get involved with that?
Well, the first time I went to the Oliver House, I was supposed to go with a PIMA investigation, but that investigation had been canceled, so my parents took me there for my birthday right after that. And so I just went in with a friend of mine, and we were staying in room G, which is considered to be the most haunted room in the place or whatever. And, you know, by and large, we didn't really, not a lot happened that night, we didn't think. And, you know, I've never, before that, I hadn't really put a lot of stock into the idea of, like, keeping dream journals when you sleep or anything like that. I didn't really put a lot of stock into dreams in terms of, you know, paranormal investigation. But while I was sleeping during the night in that room, my friend was awake in a bed across the room, and he was having a hard time sleeping. He said that his bed was shaking or something like that, but he was having a hard time sleeping. But he said that I went from a sleeping position to sitting bolt upright in the bed, and the reason why that was is I was having a dream where I was sleeping in the room, and a lady came up to me in a nightgown and introduced herself to me. And I was, you know, about to shake her hand when I realized that, you know, a lady in a nightgown shouldn't be in my room introducing herself to me.
That's a good point.
So, yeah, I woke up and I was across the bed. And so, but I didn't really think very much of it. I just thought it was a bad dream. But after the trip, I went back and I was talking to Bill Everest, who's the, you know, teacher of my parapsychology class and the leader of the group that I was involved with. And he said that, he asked me if I had any dreams, and I was like, well, I just had this one, and I described the dream to him, and he kind of smiled at me, and he said that I was the third person to have had that dream in that room, and apparently the lady that introduced herself to me was the former manager of the of the Oliver House who had died, and that room was her office. And so evidently, subsequently, people have had that same dream after the fact as well. So I've been to the Oliver House, I think, 3 times now. So, we've always gotten some interesting things out of the Oliver House.
Now, Katie, your experience was a little different. What happened with you?
At the Oliver House, I actually had, there were a few things that happened. And the first thing that kind of gave me pause was we were investigating in the hallway on the second floor, and I felt something brush past me. I felt something touch the back of my arm, and I reacted in such a way that I thought that there might be a bug crawling on me,
mm-hmm.
or maybe a stray hair had tickled my arm, and I was, concerned about it, and I looked, and there was nothing. And then I sort of thought, well, that is noteworthy. And so I sort of went on from there. And then when we went to bed, I had the experience where I felt something crawling into the bed. It was coming from the foot of the bed, and I could feel the sheets tighten around my foot as though something, were sort of grabbing onto the bed and using that for leverage to get into the bed. And I moved my feet, and I just sort of got situated again, and it happened again. And it wasn't anyone else in the room that was doing it. Everybody was sound asleep. And that happened 3 times in a row until I finally just gave up and said, you know what, I'm just going to go back to sleep, because if they want to lay in the bed, that's fine. But that's the experience that I had. And that was probably one of the first times I ever actually felt like something was trying to make a physical contact with me. Actually, interestingly enough, that's the same room that Patrick was in when he had that dream. So some years before, he'd stayed in that same room.
Now, let's go into a little bit detail about this Nosker Hill Inn Bed and Breakfast. A lot of these places have been converted into bed and breakfast, many of these old buildings. And I find that so interesting, because in this last one that we were talking about, you have a photograph where you show an orb. Now, just take a break for a minute. Let's explain what orbs are. What do orbs mean to you? I know they're energy, but in this particular picture, you only have the one. Sometimes people have had pictures where there's been a slew of orbs that will come into the picture. And, of course, there are many people that will say, these are just fabricated. Tell us what your positioning is on orbs in photography.
Well, I have a very specific point of view about orbs. I don't subscribe to the opinion across the board that all orbs are dust. I think that you can tell the difference if you look at a picture that has one solid glowing orb in it, and it's a very, very highly concentrated point of light, essentially, in the photo. And it is my belief that that is a collection of energy, and it's powerful enough to be caught on film and perhaps moving too quickly for the naked eye to capture. And that's why when we take the pictures, we see it in the picture, because we just so happened to capture it, but our brain didn't register it because it was moving too quickly. But, compare that to maybe a photo that's taken outside, at a picnic or something, and it's the middle of the afternoon, and maybe there's dust being kicked around, and you can see the dust, which appears to be a little bit clearer and not so, it doesn't have such dimension to it. But I don't necessarily believe that all orbs are dust. In fact, I think most orbs are legitimate, but that maybe isn't the popular opinion these days, but that's, I'm going to stand pat on that.
Patrick, what's your positioning on that?
I'm a little bit less convinced in orbs than, Katie is, but I think that that there's a compelling reason to think that they may be significant, if only because, like she said, sometimes they'll disappear when there's no evidence of dust in other pictures. Because we've snapped some pictures where you've done, several shots of the same location over and over again, and orbs only occur in, maybe 2 of 5 or something like that, And if it was dust particles, I think it would be present in all of them. But I think that there are a lot of orb pictures, though, that can be explained away by, a flash of light or those sorts of things. So I'm a little bit less convinced by them, but I don't count them out for sure.
Now, with this particular place, you have the ratings in your book about the various locations in Arizona. You say the intensity of paranormal activity at the Nosker Hill Inn Bed and Breakfast is quite high. Why is that?
Well, I'm not exactly sure why, because honestly, of all the places that we investigated, this one did not have any specific events that occurred that anyone that we spoke to was aware of that would have been conducive to, you know, ghosts or hauntings or that sort of thing. It used to be a high school, and in fact, one of our former governors actually attended high school there when, you know, before it was a bed and breakfast. So it was, you know, there's nothing spectacular about it except just perhaps that there were so many people there that may have had an emotional attachment to it. But the level of activity seemed nonstop. Really, it just seemed like there was such a variety of things that we experienced, from the EVP to the photos that we captured, to the dreams that we had. I mean, it was all-encompassing. I mean, I heard children giggling. I heard furniture being moved. At one point, we heard a pet collar jingling, but there were no animals in the building. It was just a very strange grouping of events that led us to give it that notorious label of having a high level of activity.
Let's go to a place that you obviously had to have a tremendous interest in to even explore. That's the Colossal Cave Mountain Park. And this is open to the public, and you say the intensity of paranormal activity is moderate to high. Patrick, what was the most profound experience that you had there? Because this cave was discovered on January 15th, according to what you've put in the material here, in 1879. So what was it that was significant to you about this particular location?
Well, I worked there as a tour guide for about 2 years, and there were a lot of things that happened over the course of those 2 years. You know, when I first started working there, I was told that eventually I would start hearing my name being called throughout the cave, especially if I was alone. There's a particular staircase there called the Phantom Staircase, where you'll tend to hear voices if you're there by yourself. But the most profound thing that happened to me was we would have these things called ghost tours occasionally, where there wasn't anybody else in the tour in the cave besides you and the group you were with, but you would still hear a tour ahead of you, you know. And there was one particular morning when I had unlocked the cave myself, and I came in, and we were the first people in the cave, and we were coming around this kind of long hallway they call the hallway of adventure, the hallway of time, depending on who you talk to. And I came to the top of a stairway that led down to another part of the cave, and I could hear another tour down at the bottom of the stairs, and it was somebody talking and people laughing. And so I actually asked my tour to stay where they were, and I ran down the stairs really quickly to see if there was anybody else in the cave, because it was very strange since we were the only ones in there. But it sounded so much like there was an actual tour in there that I felt compelled to run down and see, and there was nobody there. And as soon as I got, like, you know, down the stairs or whatever, the sound completely stopped, and there was nobody else under there, but the other people in my group also kind of heard it, so it wasn't like just that I heard it was every, you know, they heard it as well, which is why they were cool with being left alone in a cave for a couple minutes. But that sort of thing would happen on a fairly regular basis, the ghost tours, or, you know, feeling like somebody was walking behind you while you were in some of the other parts of the cave that weren't, like, on the actual tour route. And there's another area that's kind of closed off now where one tour guide that I knew described, he was in the cave cleaning, so he was in there by himself, and he heard a voice say, you know, hey, come here. And he looked and he saw somebody that looked like he was a cowboy dressed in, like, Western clothing and that sort of thing, standing behind this rock, kind of gesturing over to him, telling him to come here. And he ran out of the cave and wouldn't go back in for weeks afterwards. And, you know, I always kind of took that story with a grain of salt, but when we walked through the cave on our walkthrough, I asked Katie to take a picture of this little alcove, and we got an orb really solidly in front of the structure, and that's actually the cover of our book because it was such a strong picture. So,
now, Katie, what about you?
You mean as far as Colossal Cave?
Yes, it's Colossal Cave.
Well, I did not have the benefit of working there, but when I visited for the investigation, it was a little bit of a different situation since Patrick had already worked there and he was pretty much full disclosure on all the paranormal activity. What was interesting about it was when I walked through and I, you know, using the sensory replication and just the intuition part of it, I would get these very strong sensations, and a part of the investigation is that you mark it down in a notebook, and you specify exactly where you were when you, and the type of sensation that you had. And I had a lot of the same sensations that he had. You know, when we were done with the investigation and I showed him all of the sensations that I had in all of the locations, he said it was dead on. I mean, it was pretty much exactly what other people had reported. And in fact, the picture that he was talking about, that is the cover for the book,
right?
I walked past there. He was walking ahead of me, and I was right behind him, and I stood there, and for just a moment, and it just felt so strongly like somebody was staring at me. It was just, you know, glowering at me. And I was actually already getting out my camera when he turned around and said, "Get a picture of that, will ya?" And so I took the picture, and lo and behold, that was the cover of the book. That was such a strong sensation that I had, and clearly I wasn't the only one, because, you know, it was that intense.
Well, not only that, but you talk about employees that actually live on the premises, and the one woman, she had children, but the kids didn't even want to be there. They didn't want to be around the cave anymore because they'd seen a lot of things. And there was a little girl that was seen frequently that wore a yellow dress.
Well, I believe her name was, I can't remember the little girl's name, but I know exactly what you're referring to, and that was a little girl that died in a fire in a building that used to stand at the ranch. And she is seen, that children primarily see her in the ranch area. And the one lady we interviewed, in fact, it was her nephews that won't come and visit anymore because, you know, she freaks them out and they don't want to see her. But she's never really done anything mischievous. She's just sort of there, and people are aware of her. But, she does show up quite a bit.
Well, your book, Scarizona, is absolutely fascinating. It's summertime. For those of you that might be traveling, that are going to be visiting Arizona, it doesn't make any difference about what time of the year, but this would be a wonderful book to have, because not only would you be able to share the stories with friends, but more than that, a lot of these places that they have in the book are historical. There's so much good information, and if you love checking out spooks, ghosts, then this is a must-read. And, Katie, you said that you and Patrick have a website where people are interested in paranormal investigations, etc. They can go to that website. What is it?
Well, the name of our group is Wailing Banshee Investigations.
Wailing Banshee?
Yes. And I'm going to go ahead and spell it out for you, because, of course, I had to choose the really odd spelling of it. It's www.wailing-banshee-ID-David-H-Henry-E-Echo.com.
Okay, let's give that again. Wailing, W-A-I-L-I-N-G.
B like boy, A like apple, N like Nancy, S like Sam, I like igloo, D like David, H like Henry, E like echo.com. And that was a mouthful.
Yes, that is a mouthful. Wailing Banshee. Well, that is an attention grabber, just as a title there. Well, both of you, Katie and Patrick, I just have really enjoyed both of you tremendously. You have a delightful book. It's fun to read, but there's also a lot to pay attention to as well. So, again, thank you for being with us. Don't forget, go to the Wailing Banshee website. And Banshee is spelled B-A-N like Nelly, S like Sam, I, D like David, H-E.com. I wish you both the best, and have fun continuing your investigations. Your lives will never be dull.
Thank you so much for having us. It was fun.
It was a delight. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Yes, we've got more good things to share with you. Again, the book is Scarizona, a travel guide to Arizona's spookiest spots. Katie Malay has been my guest, and J. Patrick Oldie. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? these are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717.
This is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open if you would like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the telephone numbers to call in to 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, if you've never called in before, all I need from you is your first name or initial. It's really quite simple. And believe it or not, it's painless. Yes. So just give me a buzz, and I will give you my perceptions, and after that, you can ask me about anything that you like. Okay, I wanted to share a story with you today about a young lady. Her name is Tamika Catching. She's from Indianapolis, Indiana. This is a young woman who is going to be in the Olympics. That's right. She's going to be playing basketball in the Olympic arena. And this young woman has such an interesting story that I think for you as an individual, you might be inspired. It might make your day. So many times we look at life and we look at where we are and we think of what we cannot do rather than what we can do. And this young lady, Tamika, was born with a hearing difficulty. Actually, she's called hearing impaired. Now, she's not totally deaf. And when she was 3 years old, she was taken to an audiologist, and she was fitted with a pair of what she described as big, clunky hearing aids. She said they were as big as marshmallows. Well, we're not talking about miniature marshmallows, folks. We're talking about bigger ones. And she said she couldn't stand it. She said kids made fun of her. School was just miserable, because they were always making fun of her. But her mom said, don't worry about what other kids say. Everybody's got tough things that they're going to experience. Just live with it. Get on and do what you need to do. It's going to make you a better person. You'll hear everything that's going on around you. Well, for Tamika, it was exactly the opposite. She just felt like she was in an isolation zone all by herself. She had a very difficult time with the sounds the sh and the chest sounds, the SH and the CH sounds. And she even was made fun of when she was in the classroom because she just couldn't understand many times what a teacher was saying. And after a few embarrassing experiences, she said, I'm not going to raise my hand to herself, and I'm not going to volunteer for anything ever again. Now, she had a sister that she was just extremely close to, and they'd always walk home after school. And in her mind, Tamika said, I am determined to get rid of her, these hearing aids. I absolutely hate them. Well, the day came when she was in second grade. She was walking home from school. She pulled the hearing aids out of her ears and threw them as far as she could. Her sister found out what she had done. Before they got home, she said, oh my goodness, you're going to be in deep, deep trouble. Well, she didn't care. She had just had it. Of course, you can imagine how her mother felt when she got home and her sister said what she had done and told Mom. She was furious. Who wouldn't be? Any parent would be upset because hearing aids are expensive. And her mother said, well, we cannot afford another one. Just can't do that. Well, her mother made her go out with her to the area where she had thrown them away to try to find them. They never were able to find them. So Mom and Tamika walk home. They're not talking because Mom is really upset. Of course, Dad is then informed when he gets home from work what has happened, and there's a long discussion that goes on, and Tamika knows she is in a real problem, especially with her dad. And she thought, oh boy, my dad is really going to punish me. Well, the moment came when Dad comes into the bedroom and sits down next to her on her bed, looks at her and says, Tamika, you have made a choice. It's a pretty big choice. And now you're going to have to live with it. Now, she was really surprised because he didn't punish her in the way she was expecting. She thought to herself, I'm going to have to live with this. He told her, you're going to have to make an adjustment because we are not going to buy you any more hearing aids. You are in charge of your own life. Well, when he said that, instead of being depressed, she got excited. She got real excited. What she learned is that she's extremely good at lip reading, and she could watch the teacher closely and know exactly what she was saying. Then, as she said, if my teacher is facing the blackboard, I'll just ask her what I missed later on. Now, when she got rid of the hearing aids, the kids didn't tease her so much. Then the family ended up moving, and she had to go into a new school. What she discovered at this new school is that she absolutely loves basketball. She found she was very skilled at it. The more she practiced, the better she got. She was a natural. And in basketball, nobody cared about her hearing. She said, when you hit three-pointers regularly during games, no one minds if you hear well or not. She said, I realized I was special and basketball is my game. She is now qualified to go to the Olympics, and she said, when I return to America after the competition, I'm going to start working with hearing-impaired children that are very much like I am, and I want them to know how blessed they are and that, just as I did, they can do more with their life. She says, of course, I wouldn't encourage them to throw away their hearing aids. But wonderful things happen when you take charge of your life. And every one of these hearing-impaired individuals are special people. And they may have something extremely great inside of them, just like I found out about myself. So there's a young lady, if you see her name mentioned in the Olympic Games as a participant, which you will, it's Tamika Catchings. And as skilled as she is, you'll be aware of something that most people won't be aware of. And that is that she has a hearing disability that she didn't let stop her from being the best in her own game. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. The telephone number to call in to is 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Also, the telephone number of 530-876-3222. Now, I want to mention to you, and you'll be hearing me talking about it every day, and that is the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. This is an event that's taking place in the first three weekends in August. The dates are the 2nd, 3rd, 9th, 10th, 16th, and 17th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. I love this event. This is my sixth year of being involved. It is so much fun. Of course, I get to dress up in costumes, as all of the other people that are merchants and vendors like myself will be doing. It is so much fun. But now we have a brand new site in Belfair, Washington, 206 gorgeous acres. Absolutely magnificent. So put on your walking shoes, come out in costume, just be as comfortable as you can. If you don't want to wear a costume, you don't have to, but you can if you want to rent one. But come out and have the time of your life. It's absolutely a marvelous event. We've got 8 stages where activities, performances are going all day long. And we have so much for kids, over 100 vendors. It is totally magical in this new environment. So if you want information on the new directions and how to get to Belfair, if you're in the Seattle, Washington area, you can take the ferry over. They'll have a shuttle every hour going to and from the fair. Also, you can get your directions, like I said, by going to their website, WashingtonRenFair.com. That's Washington, RENFAIRE.com. You can go to their email if you want to communicate with them. It's info at WashingtonRenFair.com. And then they also have a toll-free number of 888-233-3895. So check it out. It is just absolutely marvelous, and the kids will love it. You'll get your tickets to discount if you go onto the website. Why not be prepared? Make your plans now. Come on out. If you're in the state of Washington, great. If you want to fly in from out of state, we have people from all over the world to come out to see this wonderful event. It's one of the best in the country, and it's getting bigger and bigger. We've had at least 80,000 people come out, and the crowds just keep getting bigger, and with this new site, it is just going to be awesome. Plenty of parking, by the way, and the parking's free. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 and 530-876-3222. I'll light up your life with a little bit of insight. Now, tomorrow we're going to have an open mic day, so telephones will be open for the entire hour. On Thursday, we're going to be stepping back into history. We're going to be stepping back into a time of history that took place in Ghana, in Africa. Sarah Armstrong is going to be my guest. This is her true story of what went on under the reign of Idi Amin. And then on Friday, well, if you think you've heard stories about bulimia, you're going to hear another one, Lori Hansen. Now, bulimia typically affects more females than it does males, but she is going to be talking about how it all started with Pop-Tarts. Mm-hmm. She has an alternative approach to winning the battle of bulimia. If you've ever known of anybody that's experienced that or has gone through it, this is really a very, very sincere and meaningful story that Lori Hansen is going to share with us. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for a moment. We'll be back. And again, those phone lines are open, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyMD.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Hi, Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756 or 530, 876-3222. I wanted to share some information with you today about plastics. There has been some comment made about this, but there was some research that was done regarding plastics, and of course, it's so much in our lives. In many ways, I'm so grateful for it. I had something drop the other day that was plastic. It was filled and it was heavy, and fortunately, because it was plastic, it bounced. If it had been glass, it would have shattered into a gazillion pieces and a tremendous mess would have ensued. But there are points about plastic that are very, very significant, and I wanted to share that with you today because some of them you don't want to use in a microwave. You don't want to put food into it because it is going to actually leach into your food, particular chemicals that, due to the chemistry and or heat stimulus from the microwave energy, the chemistry that goes on isn't healthy for you. So what you need to do is whenever you have a plastic container, and if you're like so many people, you're going to save them. You want to turn it over before you use that plastic container for anything. You want to turn it over and look for the number in the center of the triangle of arrows that is superimposed on the bottom of the plastic piece. This will tell you what kind of plastic it is, if it can be recycled, and whether or not it includes chemicals that might harm your health. Now, there are numbers with this, and when you're looking at that triangle, you're going to go from 1 to 3 all the way up to 7. Now, it's important to know that the lower the number is, it is going to be something you may not want to use. So let me give you the specifics here. If a number 1 inside that triangle, you don't want to use it again. In other words, if it's a water bottle, you want to not go and reuse it if it's got the number 1 on the bottom of that water bottle. If you use a bottle and it has the number 2 on it, it means that it is safe to use and that is recyclable. And the number 1s are recyclable too. The number 3s are vinyl or PVC, and you don't want to recycle them, interestingly enough, because these particular plastic bottles that have the 3 on them, you want to avoid using them. They leach hormone-disrupting phthalate plasticizers and lead into food. Now, that's something I didn't know anything about. So often they're used, like in lunch bags, something like this. They're not used. This material is not used in something that you put food into. Also, number 4 is a low-density polyethylene. It's safe, and they're recyclable. And any of your plastic recycling centers, and that they have the number 4 in them, they will accept them. This can be usable. Number 5, they're made of polypropylene. They're safe. They're recyclable. And There's also, some information I want to share with you. You know, your plastic wrap, if it has the number 4 on the box, it's used as a food wrap because it is safe to use. And believe it or not, there are some plastic wraps you should not use with your food. Now, number 6 is polystyrene. You do not want to use that with food. You don't want to microwave anything that has a number 6 on its bottom. It can leach styrene, which is a possible human carcinogen. Now, it is recyclable, so watch the numbers. And number 7 is polycarbonate. It's questionable. They do know that it has a hormone-disrupting bisphenol A, and this is not recyclable. And then there's something that is stamped with PLA, which is polylactide, which is made from renewable plant resources. Now, what's interesting about this plastic is that it's safe to use. You can bring it with food, but it's not recyclable. But you can compost it because it's made from plants. And something that I learned just this year, earlier in the year, from some of the material that I've received, is that corn is now being used in making plastic materials. And it is something that can be recycled, it can be composted, it is absolutely wonderful. So, when you see the number 7 inside of that triangle of arrows, you will know that it's questionable. But if it has PLA on it, you will know it's made from renewable plant resources. So it's absolutely amazing what we're coming up with. And I think that as time goes on, because there are so many people as chemists and as manufacturers, they're wanting to be more and more resourceful, and they want things to be readily adaptable to the environment that's not going to cause harm. They are really working hard at developing more and more ways of sort of phasing out these particular plastics that have been discovered. They didn't know this initially when they put it out. They've been discovered not to be beneficial for the environment, nor is it beneficial for us, obviously, if it's not beneficial for the environment. Now, plastics seem to last forever because they are made from oil and natural gas, and they don't decompose in the environment. Instead, they accumulate in ever greater amounts on land and water, and someone emailed me a group of photographs that were just mind-boggling. One was a turtle eating plastic, and of course it had killed the turtle eventually because it can't digest it, it can't go through the system. Also, in the North Pacific, currents have swept together a floating island of plastic twice the size of Texas, and it's composed of tires, toys, and other plastic waste. It doesn't disperse. It's doubled in size in the last 6 years, and animals are getting trapped in it. One day, someone is going to come up with a machine that will actually pick all of that up out of the water and be able to recycle it right on site. We are going to have someone who's going to end up becoming a billionaire that's going to know how to recycle it all. This is Donna Siebel. My goodness, we're almost out of time. I want to say, remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. There is so much in this world that can be amended, corrected, improved, and it's up to each of us as individuals to do whatever we can as individuals to make our world a better place. So being informed, being wiser, and being smarter does make a difference. This is Donna Siebel. Talk with you tomorrow, right here, same time, same place, on bbsradio.com. And don't forget, if you miss a show, you can always get an archive. We'll be talking tomorrow, open mic, all hour. So same time, same place. Bye for now.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. in the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.